In thousands of schools across the country, more than 1,600 books were banned during the last school year. Many of them were challenged because of content related to race and sexuality. We've been covering this all week, and now we want to hear how the fight over what ends up on the shelves of school libraries is playing out in your community. We heard back from a lot of parents, teachers, and students, and we're going to bring Jonathan Friedman in now. He's director of Free Expression and Education Programs for PEN America. It's a group that works to protect freedom of expression. Also the author of a report that came out this week about the rise of banned books in schools across the country. Jonathan, welcome.
Great to be here.
And we'll get to our listeners in just a moment, but first of all, one of my takeaways from this report is that there are communities in this country that are on fire over this issue. How do you see it?
Well, I see it as an uptick in not only calls to remove books from schools, but in particular in the organization and coordination of it as a growing movement, as we called it in the report. There have been demands and challenges to books in schools for decades, but there is something different taking place right now. This isn't just individual parents in isolated ways picking up books from their children and filing complaints. There are groups online who are trying to coordinate and encourage people to bring their concerns, not just to bring them to school boards, but to bring them in a kind of adamant, uncompromising fashion.
We're going to get to all of that, but first, let's bring in some of our listeners. We heard from a lot of teachers, including Adam Byrne Tritt, who teaches high school English in Brevard County, Florida.
I have had books in my classroom library that I had to pull off my shelves. Poetry books, such as Emily Dickinson. I've had books I've used for years that I had to stop using. There are things which I am mandated to teach, but I must develop lesson plans for carefully, such as Shakespeare's The Tempest, which I must somehow teach without ever bringing up the concept of colonialism or color, so that I do not make any student uncomfortable in any way.
Now, we heard a lot about this, the idea that even many classics that have been taught for years in schools are causing conflict. How common is that across the country?
Well, I think this is very common. You know, the idea that is behind a lot of these bans is that essentially any parent who's objecting about anything ought to be able to take that objection into action. In other words, that book that they don't like ought to be restricted from everybody. And that is what is causing so much chaos and difficulty for a lot of schools, which have historically run, you know, with a degree of trust and expertise vested in teachers. It doesn't mean that there aren't channels and there shouldn't be channels for parents to raise these concerns, but it's an extreme to jump to, I don't like this book, therefore nobody should be able to read it. And that seems to be what's common in many teachers and librarians' experiences.
Okay, let's hear from a student. This is high school junior Alexandra Coffey, who says her Central Bucks School District in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, has recently come up with very restrictive book policies, particularly on gender identity and race. Here she is.
I am deeply concerned by the negative effects that this policy will have on our Black, Brown, and queer students. If these students, my friends and I, we can't read about people that think like us, look like us, love like us, what kind of negative effects will this have? My biggest question would be, how is all of this legal?
That's a good question. Is it legal?
Well, there was an interpretation that was offered by Supreme Court Justice William J. Brennan when he considered the precise pattern of facts that is common now among many school districts. And he said that school libraries ought to function in conjunction with the First Amendment. And that means that they cannot be places where the government is engaged in the official suppression of ideas. So think about this for a second. You have people who are bringing complaints, often targeted against books just because they have LGBTQ identities or because they represent some perspective on race or racism, or sometimes they're just books with protagonists of color that people are objecting to. And then you have government officials, whether it's school administrators or it's school board members, who are reacting and saying, you're right, something is wrong with this book. We need no due process. We don't need to read these books. Let's just remove them right away. And that is what Justice Brennan raised concerns about, and that would be unconstitutional. And this came out of the Pico v. Island Trees court case in 1982.
Well, here's another point of view. One of our listeners, Alexia Duke, a mother of three, whose kids go to school in Lexington, Massachusetts, did express some frustration with curriculum. She wrote into us and she said that she has three kids in the public school system, and through the years, their reading lists have become almost exclusively non-white, non-heterosexual, and non-Western. She goes on to say that she understands there are different points of view regarding the Western canon and its place in our students' education, but that an English course shouldn't be exclusively concerned with political debates and social justice issues. Just hoping you could weigh in on that.
Well, I think that what's clear is that democracy is about openness, and that ought to be reflected in our schools. And so that means school classrooms and teachers being able to engage in a range of issues of the day, a range of perspectives, and to offer opportunities for students to think, to be challenged, to weigh different opinions. I worry that what we're seeing right now with the censorious climate that is taking shape is that a lot of teachers are going to, instead of pushing students, instead of bringing up things that might be controversial or often, frankly, speak to the world they live in, they're going to opt for lessons that are more anodyne or less relevant for the sake of avoiding controversy. And so what should English class be about? You know, this is a question that people have been debating for a long time, and that debate is healthy. Let's continue that debate. But censorious responses to this, you know, prohibitions, that's no way to solve disagreements about these questions.
Let's talk for a moment about who is behind much of this. Chandler Geese is a public school teacher in Louisville, Kentucky. He's pointing this out. He says what he sees in his community goes far beyond the attempt to ban books.
There's groups like the American Family Association of Kentucky going around to different churches saying that the homosexuals are coming for your children, that public schools are not making your children Christian, therefore they basically have to go. And so it's not about banning books. It's about riling up people for a political movement that is anti-public school, anti-education, anti-literacy, and backed by major donors.
Jonathan, weigh in on this. Talk about the groups. American Majority, Patriot Mobile, Moms for Liberty, who we've spoken to this week, and perhaps others. They're not just attending school board meetings, but they're joining the school board. Have we ever seen this level of involvement before?
I think this is something new, an effort to really make local school board meetings political in a new way, injecting, you know, a particular ideology that often appears to be pretty extreme and, you know, very narrow into controlling public schools. And, you know, a lot of the groups here, I would say, are actually different. Some of them seem to be more oriented to conservative values, some to more Christian values. Some are groups that, you know, have very clear anti-LGBTQ animus, and some are clearly formed, you know, in the wake of the pandemic and have objections over that. And so there's a range of ideologies that are circulating online among these groups. And when you speak to teachers and librarians around the country, it's essentially the same story just about everywhere. People shouting at school board meetings, people being doxxed or harassed, or having people come to their houses. But it's my greatest concern also here that there's been so much undermining of respect for teachers and librarians. You know, what teacher or librarian deserves to have their entire career ruined over a book?
One more piece of tape here. I mentioned I'd spoken with a member of one of these groups. This is Tiffany Justice, co-founder of Moms for Liberty. She told me that she was concerned that young school children could get their hands on books with sexually explicit or graphic content. Here she is.
Parents are saying, what is going on here? Why is this very sexually explicit content being pushed down into lower and lower grades? Why do people want to talk to our children in kindergarten at the age of 5 when they still believe in the tooth fairy?
Now, the truth is that some of the books in question here do have sexually explicit content in them. So how would you tell parents to navigate this situation?
Well, I think what we have to do is develop a shared language here. There's a lot of words being bandied about: sexually explicit, pornographic, obscene. A lot of the books that are getting these labels are literary classics, and I've seen it said that the books have no literary merit, you know, just because they have some kind of sexual content in them whatsoever. And we have to remember that we're talking about, in many cases, teenagers who might be sexually active. We're talking about
young people who also have a right to access information about themselves, about their bodies. And it is in the absence of education and information where people are, you know, more likely to be taken advantage of. So we need to actually remember that the reason why we educate people is to protect them, is to allow them to have the knowledge of the world in order to function in it. And the other thing is that right now, a lot of cases where the books are being targeted for removal because of their sexual content, it's books that have LGBTQ content that are trying to reach LGBTQ youth, many of whom live in unsafe home environments, and books and libraries and schools are a lifeline for them. And so we have to hear those voices in this too. And so we have to be aware of all of these factors and these rights when we think about how schools can mediate these decisions.
Jonathan Friedman is director of Free Expression and Education Programs at PEN America, also lead author of a report that came out this week on the rise of banned books in the U.S. We're going to link you to it at hereandnow.org. Jonathan, thank you so much.
Thank you.